Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. The Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly faces a full agenda as it meets tonight for the first time in nearly a month. The panel is set to consider measures that, if voter approved, would allow taxation above the borough revenue cap to pay for facility repairs and maintenance. There's an over $60 million bond package from Mayor Carl Castle and two ordinances to raise taxes to cover building repairs. Co-sponsor of the ordinances, Assemblymember Matt Cooper, describes them as a creative way to address facilities maintenance outside of a bond package.
Because when you end up bonding, you end up paying interest and you end up paying folks to repair the bond packages. So it was a way to achieve the same goal, but at a lower cost.
One of the ordinances would specifically fund repair of the Mary Saya Recreation Center. Cooper notes that aging facilities like Mary Saya are not suited to bonding.
To use bond proceeds, you have to be able to extend the useful life of a building beyond the term of the bond.
The Assembly passed the Mary Saya funding ordinance last month, but it's back for reconsideration at Cooper's request. Cooper says it makes sense to consider all facility maintenance funding measures at one meeting. Co-sponsor Catherine Dodge agrees, and both additionally point to another factor, a delayed structural analysis report on Mary Saya.
We don't know yet whether it can be fixed even.
The report was expected in August, which would have been in time for the public to understand what it said. Now that it's not due out until December, it probably doesn't make sense to approve this.
Also up for public hearing and debate tonight is an urban agriculture ordinance aimed at accommodating the trend of people growing and raising more of their own food. There's also an ordinance that would add brew pubs and microbreweries as permitted uses in downtown areas of Fairbanks and North Pole. The director of the Tinnanaw Chiefs Conference Village Public Safety Officer Program has been charged with leaving the scene of an accident and criminal mischief. Alaska State Troopers report that 41-year-old Jody Potts of Fairbanks used her truck to push a car, blocking her from getting out of a parking spot at the Tinnanaw Lakes Recreation Area on July 4th. The car was pushed into the middle of a parking lot and sustained front-end damage. Potts drove off, but a witness followed her and contacted troopers. Potts is a leader in rural public safety and has been a keynote speaker at the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention. There's been major growth of some interior wildfires as hot, dry weather continues. The Texalda Hill Fire near Tok is now estimated at 12,000 acres. The blaze is burning on Tetlin Village Corporation land, and 89 firefighters are working to protect native land allotments and area cabins. Three other interior wildfires are also getting attention. An Alaska Fire Service crew is deployed on the 16-acre Hughes Mountain Fire, which AFS spokeswoman Beth Ipson says is burning in black spruce about 4 miles from the village of Hughes.
There's a continuous fuel in between the fire and Hughes. Even though the village of Hughes is on the other side of the river, we just don't want to risk it.
AFS firefighters are also on the long-burning Zitziana River fire south of Manly Hot Springs. It gained 20,000 acres this week and has now charred a total of 54,000 acres. Ipson says the focus continues to be protecting cabins on Kindamina Lake.
All the cabins on the east side, we've put in protection measures. You know, they've got black line around the cabins, so they're safe. And now we're working on the west side and putting black line around the cabins on the west side. We feel that we're in a good spot right now to where we don't have to worry about the structures around Kindamina Lake.
AFS personnel have been joined by National Park Service firefighters to protect historic cabins at the Coal Creek Mining Camp in the Yukon Charley Rivers National Preserve, where the Dome Creek Fire has burned 770 acres. The total acreage burned in Alaska so far this season has reached 300,000 acres now, well below the normal seasonal average of over 1 million acres. The Tinnanaw Valley State Fair opens a week from tomorrow, and new managers have filled the vendor space, recruited contest entries, and booked entertainment. As KUEC's Robin reports, they're hoping to put past fair controversies behind them.
Weed Whackers buzzed as Jim McDermott, the new operations manager, walked around the grounds where 207 out of the 212 booth spaces were booked. McDermott has a background in management and ran for an Alaska House seat. He's part of the mostly new staff running the fair this year. They were hired by a mostly new fair association board, and they recruited mostly new volunteers. McDermott was hired in the spring and is a relentless cheerleader for the fair.
The team has fun. We love what we're doing, and we can't wait to put on a show for our community, and we hope they love it.
The new personnel of the Tenino Valley Fair Association have spent the spring and summer in community outreach and recruitment, trying to heal mistrust and bust some myths about how the fair is run. In his non-air-conditioned office, the new executive director, Blake Matray, who is also a recent hire and is also enthusiastic, says they have been using Facebook and YouTube videos to get this message across.
The Tenino Valley State Fair is a 501c3 nonprofit association. The fair essentially is put on for the community by a bunch of people from the community who come together to form the Tenino Valley State Fair Association.
Matray is the fourth fair boss since 2016, including two who stepped up to manage after their predecessors resigned. He inherited some leftover negativity. In 2013, there was a falling out between the fair organization and Golden Wheel Amusements, who had provided the Midway Carnival rides for almost four decades. Golden Wheel accused the fair of breaching its contract. The dispute was settled in 2015, but the fair has not asked Golden Wheel to return, and that company now runs a competing summer carnival in Fairbanks. This year it's at the Carlson Center and will overlap with the first 3 days of the fair. For the last 4 years, Canada-based A1 Midway has provided the carnival rides.
We've got really good rides with A1 Midway here. They've been working on trying to bring some new rides up for this year, so there'll be a little bit of a different look to it.
2 years ago, two musicians were stopped in the middle of their act and asked to leave by managers when some fairgoers erroneously assumed the musicians' song lyrics contained profanity and advocated violence. Some of the facts of the incident were shared widely on social media and caused distrust between the community and fair management. McDermott says the fair has a new entertainment coordinator and the whole association learned from the event.
We understand we have a history. Some has been phenomenal and we've had a few hiccups too. It could have been handled with a little bit more finesse, yes. And we're going to do better, and we're going to keep getting better.
Matray says quality entertainment is a high priority for the new staff.
Little River Band is coming on August 9th on what is also Canned Food Day. Then we've got four other major concerts. We've got a band from California. We've got an R&B singer from Anchorage. We have Marty Brown from Nashville. And then we've got an up-and-coming country star named Austin Burke. It's coming up to open on Friday night the 3rd.
About 90,000 people visit the fair each year. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Bering Sea temperatures remain above normal, and scientists are trying to figure out what the lingering heat means for some of the world's largest commercial fisheries. The Alaska Energy Desk's Nat Herz reports.
Last winter, there was far less ice in the Bering Sea than scientists have ever seen. Part of the reason was that the water was abnormally warm. Remember the blob, the North Pacific heat wave? It's gone now, and temperatures south of the Bering Sea have cooled off. But in the Bering Sea, they haven't. John Walsh is chief scientist at the International Arctic Research Center in Fairbanks.
The blob has essentially faded away. Water temperatures are pretty close to normal in that region. But what happened is that some of the water during the blob warm period spilled into the Bering Sea region. That heat that was picked up in the Bering Sea has not gone away.
Walsh was part of a group of scientists that published a paper earlier this year on Alaska ocean warmth. They think the blob's presence contributed initially to warming in the Bering Sea. But the Bering Sea has also warmed independently from the blob, thanks to persistent winds from the south. And without as much sea ice, which reflects sunlight, temperatures can climb even higher. The paper published this year says the warmer Bering Sea temperatures can't be explained without human-caused climate change, just like the blob in the Gulf of Alaska. But some of the warmth also appears to stem from natural variation. For Alaska's Energy Desk in Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
And I'm Dan Bross.